save big money on everything for your next bathroom project now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Let's not fight about which is better or you use this and I use this when we just all have the same goal. We all just want to shoot deer.
Yep. We met at the ATA show this year. You were at the booth for Bone Boss, right? Or no, you were at the booth for Big Buck, correct?
Big Buck Magnet. Yep.
Bone Boss is your brand?
Yeah. So Bone Boss Outdoors, that's my company, mm-hmm. Bone Boss Outdoors LLC. And then I work with Big Buck Magnet. So they're a deer feed. And then we're just getting ready to release our new line of food plot seed. And so it's actually got bags and seed in. Literally just a couple days ago.
Awesome.
So super excited about that.
For sure. So how'd you get into Bone Boss? How'd you come up with that? How'd you lead up into doing that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so Bone Boss, what it is what I like to tell people is it's kind of two divisions. It's a game call division and land management division. So the game calls is I do deer and turkey calls, handcrafted. And so you can find those on my website. I have pot calls and then grunts and rattle bags all on there. But then the land management side is a full service land management business. So anything from habitat to food plots, forestry mulching, any kind of planting, any kind of designing, I do it on the land management side. I specialize more in like creating habitat on properties. I do a lot of CRP, maintenance of CRP properties, and a lot of forestry mulching too. So that's kind of what Bone Boss Outdoors is in kind of a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's designed around this entire outdoor business to help everybody kind of get what they need or get what they want while they're hunting, you know, whether it's on the land management side or calling in a deer or turkey. And so the two go hand in hand. You want good habitat. And then when you go out and hunt, you want to have a successful hunt. And so that's kind of what kind of molds Bone Boss Outdoors.
Nice. How did you decide that's what you wanted to do? Or like, do you have a background in that or something you were interested in, just started learning about or what? On the, we'll go management side first and then the calls.
Yeah. On the management side. I mean, so like for me, I mean, I've grown up out in the outdoors, just like, you know, a lot of us that are in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been hunting and fishing since I was, you know, 5, 6 years old. My
right.
dad was taking me. My dad would, he kind of instilled that love for the outdoors into me, like super young. So it's like really all I thought about growing up. I kind of joke because like we live out in the country. And so behind our house is like this woods. And so, I would just go out and walk around and just kind of see what was out there or look for just kind of anything that I could find. And I mean, they, you know, mom and dad or dad would be out feeding the animals, the cows and stuff and have to holler for me to come in.
Right.
Because I'd be out there exploring. But, and then we, you know, grew up, you know, coon hunting. So my dad would take me coon hunting at, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. We was out there at night, you know, coon hunting and loved it. But deer hunting has kind of always been my passion, and I've always loved just the habitat behind wildlife in general. And just because if, you know, if you have great habitat for everything, you're going to have great habitat for deer hunting and everything
yep.
like that. So, I've done, you know, 'cause I have a farming background, we farm as well. My family, small scale farm, not anything large. But so I have that farming background and just kind of that outdoor habitat, you know, land management work. You know, we've always been planting. We've always been kind of working the ground and doing everything like that and digging deep into kind of what makes soil soil and what makes it good and what makes it bad. And how to help it out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's my goal. What I try to do with people and with building habitat is like, no, I want to maximize the potential of what your property is or what your soil can be. Like, I'm going in and looking a deep look into everything that you do or have when you have a property. But I mean, I've just grown up doing it my whole life, and I've worked for some other people when I was younger, you know, similar stuff, planting CRP and
Yeah.
doing all this. And so I've always been around it and always grew up, and it's just kind of something that, you know, I took to the next level with myself, just because of that love for it and wanting to help people out and help maximize their property's potential.
Yeah. That's I want to come back to something you said there in a minute, but going back to talking about growing up like that in the outdoors and running around until basically mom or dad hollered at you and told you to come back in, I feel like that is such a better way to grow up than
Oh, yeah.
the way a lot of kids seem to be now, with like they get a device at 3 or 4 years old, and then that thing is literally tied to their hand for the rest of their life, and they miss out on so much. And then we end up with less hunters and less outdoorsmen, and then, I mean, that leads to issues too. But I feel like that way of growing up, and you learn so much about everything, not just the outdoors.
Oh, 100%. Like, I learned so much growing up, just from exploring, you know, just from trying to figure things out on my own. And I mean, walking through the woods, I mean, whether you're doing a consult or actually doing work or just wanting to explore, I mean, it will teach you so much
Oh, yeah.
about, you know, everything around. And so, yeah, I mean, that's how I grew up. I didn't really play video games or anything like that. It was pretty rare to find me in the house. And if I was in the house, I was trying to get outside
Right,
just because
right.
that's what I love. And now, granted, I mean, we live in a different time now. You know, that's what people have
Oh, yeah.
so readily, you know, accessible to them is technology and phones. And but yeah, it was definitely different, and I wouldn't change anything on how I grew up
Right.
and what I did. So kind of, you know, gave me the love that I have today.
Yeah, I think a lot of kids now that will enjoy the outdoors through like YouTube or something, right? And obviously, like we make YouTube videos, so I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but like when we were younger, and I think you're about my age, so when we were younger, like I would maybe watch the Outdoor Channel before school in the morning or whatever, and then like we still had some old VHS tapes of guys, and like I would watch those after dark. Or if I was locked in at work and couldn't go outside, you know, like mom and dad were working and I was up here and couldn't go outside. But other than that, like actually going out there and doing it, like I would encourage anybody young today, if it looks like fun, like to be out there and do that, then don't just let it look like fun. Go out there and do it, you know, experience it. And then you're gonna know whether you like it or not. But there's so much out there to enjoy and learn, and then eventually those are the people that become like me and you and have a passion for conservation and everything like that.
Oh, definitely. Because I mean, I wouldn't change it the same. You know, we would get magazines in the mail. You know, my dad got, whether it was, you know, Big Buck magazines or Coon Hunt magazines or something. And I mean, I would just look through those things all the time. But and then I'd be outside, I mean, doing that stuff. But like, I try to, you know, I got two little girls of my own, and I try to, you know, kind of instill that into them. Like, always, they love to be outside, which is awesome. And they're fascinated with the things that, you know, dad does with the land management and deer hunting. And, you know, they'll go riding the tractor with me, and they love it. And there's just so much, you know, cool stuff. And granted, they like to play inside too and
Oh yeah.
stuff. They're young, and, you know, watch cartoons and that. But any chance you can get them outside, it's always better than being cooped up inside. It's
Yeah, I agree
hands down.
completely. Do you remember your first deer that you killed?
Oh, like it was yesterday, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is the same for like all hunters, but I mean, I could tell you every deer I've killed, I mean, every, you know, hunt and everything. And it always seems like your favorite hunt is the one that just happened. But yeah, my first deer, I think I was like 9 years old. Took me a couple years to actually kill one, but it was just a little 6-pointer.
Yeah.
And, me and my dad had been hunting all season, and we just gun hunted back then.
Okay.
And but I'm big bow hunter now. Like, that's what I kind of do most of the time. But
That seems to
back
be
then
a
we just,
natural progression, really.
yeah. And back then we were just gun hunting and shotgun hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, open sight shotgun
Oh, yeah.
and wooden built tree stands. I
Yep.
mean, it was awesome when you stop and think about it. This and but yeah, it was a 6-pointer, and we weren't even sitting in the stand. We came out, and we was hunting with my uncle too, and he was on the other side of the property, and we were all coming down, and we're meeting up, and we actually had some deer that were coming across the field, and we, ran down a tree line and kind of got relatively close as we could, and set up and took a shot, and I shot a 6-pointer and ran up in the woods and died, and my uncle ended up shooting a buck that time too. So
Nice.
it's a very memorable hunt, not your typical kind of how you expect things to happen on sitting in a stand and everything, but
Yeah.
that's what made it more memorable.
Right. When did you start bow hunting, really? And what was your first
Oh,
bow?
my first bow, man. I started bow hunting probably a few years. I think I was like 12, 13. I started to get into
Okay.
those teenager age,
Yeah.
and begging my dad to bow hunt. And because really it was why I wanted to bow hunt, was because my dad told me it was the only way I could go hunting by myself.
Yeah.
And so if I was gun hunting, I had to be with him, or like while he was hunting somewhere on the property. But bow hunting, I could go out by myself. So I begged him for a bow and to start. And he found a guy at his work was selling an old bear bow, and he bought this setup, I think, for like, I don't know, $75 or $100, and it came with a bow, the old aluminum
Oh, yeah.
arrows, a case, releases. Like, it was a whole setup.
Basically for the
And
price of a dozen arrows now.
exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. And I would sit out in the front yard and just shoot and shoot and shoot. Just because I never shot a bow before, and so I wanted to be good with it. I wanted to make sure that when I saw a deer, I was going to actually kill it.
Yeah.
And but yeah, and then and so my first deer with a bow, hunting by myself, and it was October, and man, it was a pretty sure it was another 6-pointer, and I just remember this thing had come all the way across the field, and one, it was like 15 yards in front of me, a broadside. It couldn't have been more like picture perfect how it happened, and made a good shot, and it ran. I probably still ran, 100 yards, and piled up and called my, or at that time, obviously, we didn't have cell phones,
Right.
so you couldn't call people. And so I had to walk up to the house because I was very close to the house. And so I walked up to the house and told my dad, and he didn't believe me at first, because it's not something we ever did, was bow
Yeah.
hunt. And I said, yeah, I said, I watched him, and he fell over there. And so it was, me, my dad, my uncle, we went and found it. And it was just one of the coolest things. It's like, oh my goodness, hey, we're shooting deer in October now. This
Yeah,
isn't
right.
normal.
It's a whole
We're
new
used
world.
to, right, we're used to hunting in November and everything. But yeah, it was super cool.
But yeah, I've asked so many people that question about their first bow, and I don't know, a very high percentage are either PSE or bear. It's crazy. 'Cause like in the early days, those guys were making a lot of bows and a lot of people were buying
Oh
them.
yeah. Yep.
My first adult bow was a split limb high country aluminum arrows, just like you're talking about. And I don't know how many of those things I bent or
Yeah.
broke or, like just anything, stuck them in trees.
Yeah.
I missed so many deer before I finally killed one with my bow. I don't know if you had similar experience or not, but like.
Oh, yeah. I remember one. I was I think it was just on a doe and up in a tree stand, and she comes by and she was like kind of off to like the side of what a tree, and I shot and I was a little bit to the right and put that arrow right in the tree, like 12 feet up in the air, and this arrow just stuck in there, and I was and then she ran off. And but oh yeah, so many of those happen, and
That's part of it, though.
that's part of it,
It
right? That's
is.
what makes it fun. And then you kind of progress to, to how you hunt now, or, because you mentioned PSE. So like that bear bow, that was my first bow, and I used that bow for quite a while, maybe 6 years. And my first, like, I don't want to call it a real bow, but like fast compound bow was a PSE. I actually took, I graduated high school and I took some of my graduation money, and that was what I bought, was, a new fast bow. And yeah, it was PSE Bow Madness is what it was.
Nice. Yeah, that's crazy thinking back about all the dumb things I did when I was learning how to hunt, And this is another conversation I've had with several guys that, like us, have young kids or whatever, and are in the position we are now where, have some decent hunting opportunities. But sounds like you're the same way. Wasn't always that way. Like, and grew up trial and error, really learning through some failure. And you see a lot of people now are taking their kids out and they're shooting like, 150, 160 inch deer in their first hunts. And it's like, I don't know if that's the best thing for them. Like, I'm not judging. I'm not trying to tell anybody how to do it, but I just don't know if I would appreciate it as much as I do now if I started like that.
Oh yeah, because I mean, I've killed a lot of deer. I've been fortunate to kill a lot of deer, and I didn't really start shooting, like nice deer till, I was probably like mid 20s, and then really started shooting big deer till, late 20s, 30s. And it's like, but that's what, and I take my oldest daughter, I started taking her hunting a couple years ago. This is her third season I've taken her, but I've been just taking her out just, so she can get used to it and see kind of what goes on. And I'll take my bow with me, and we've said, if a doe comes close enough, dad is going to try to shoot it. But it's more so about the experience for them and getting out there. It might be so loud they ain't gonna see a deer for a mile radius, or more about eating snacks and drinking hot chocolate. And that's the one thing she loves, is she got her little book bag with all of her snacks in it and the hot chocolate, and sitting blind with the heater. But yeah, and I this year, might take her out with an actual like crossbow maybe, and see how that kind of works. But it's all about progression, for me. It's like you got to get to that point, and because you don't want to force anything on them, or like you said, shooting 150, 160 inch deer. It's like, okay, well, where do we go from here? Like, where's up from here? It's like you don't want everything else to be kind of a disappointment, because that's how you lose the love for it. I mean, there's people that like hunting. There's people that love hunting. A lot of people absolutely love hunting. And then there are people, I consider myself this, that it's life. Like it's more than just a love. It goes way, way beyond that. It's life. I mean, I can sit here and tell you that there's not a single day that goes by during the year that I'm not thinking about deer. Like, what are they doing? What can I do? What can I improve? What habitat work needs done? Check in trail cameras. Do they need feet? Like anything. Like Lee Lukoski's been on record of saying, like, he literally thinks about deer 24/7. And Lee's on a different level, but I think that statement is true for so many people when it is more than a love, and it's life.
Yeah. Yep. And that, you know, that brings up another point. A lot of people will hear like Lee Likoski or the Drurys, or, you know, name your big TV personality that kills a lot of giant deer, right? And they're, I think most of it's just jealousy, but they don't realize, they'll badmouth those people because, oh, it must be nice or whatever, right? They don't understand, number one, where they started. And number two, like the mindset you're talking about that people like that have. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some people that are quote-unquote famous or celebrity deer hunters that aren't really like that, for sure. But a good number of them have that mindset that you're talking about, and that's why they're where they're at, is because they've been blessed with opportunity, sure, but, you know, they worked for that, and then they have that. Every day they're thinking about, what can I do to kill the next, you know, giant buck or whatever? And I think that gets lost. That's lost on a lot of people because they can't see past the fact that they don't have the big farms that these people have. And they, not realizing that even if they did, they probably still wouldn't have the success because they don't have the right mindset.
Right. Well, and that, and so we kind of, that kind of brings me to something I wanted to talk about, because we talked about this at ATA, and, but that's the thing, man. That's why I love whitetail hunting so much, because a couple things, but like the one thing is like, it's one of the easiest like entry level huntings that you can get into. You know, you want to start hunting, like get some camo, you know, find a spot and kind of sit out there and just start to learn. You know, you can do gun hunting or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's easy to get into. But on the flip side of that is that there is so many different styles of hunting that there's not one size fits all. Like, you watch on YouTube in these shows and you see how, you know, the bigger guys do it. Well, that's their style. That's not for everybody.
Yeah.
And so like my style of hunting is probably different than your style of hunting, from, you know, and different from, I got tons of buddies that I talk to, and, you know, my buddy John, Big Buck Magnet, we're always talking about hunting and what's going on and what, and his style is different than my style. Mm-hmm. And so like every style is not the same, but it's also cool because your styles adapt to, you know, the age and the property and kind of what's going on. I mean, I just told you how my first hunts went when I was younger, and how I only gun hunted and then moved to bow. And now that's, you know, that's pretty much what all I do is bow. And so the style is across the board for everybody. And just because somebody sees one person doing something doesn't mean that that's how they have to do it to kill big deer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the deer I killed this year, was a little bit different style than kind of what I've hunted in the past, but that's the property. That's how the property hunted. And you gotta, if you're hunting a specific deer too, you gotta kind of adapt your style to how that deer acts. And so that's why that's the awesome thing about deer hunting, is there's so many different ways to do it that you can't go wrong.
Yeah. You find your way that you like to do it, and you can do it that way. As long as it's legal and ethical, like, exactly, by all means.
Because everybody's style's different. It's easy to get into. Everybody's style's different. But guess what? We all have the same end goal.
Yeah.
And that is to harvest a deer. Everybody's deer that they want to harvest is different too. Some people just want to shoot does, you know, or whatever, for meat. Some people just want to shoot a buck. Some people hunt specific bucks, mature bucks. It's different, but everybody's goal is the same, and that's to harvest a deer.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. And I think like one of the dumbest things that hunters do, and not to just like rag on hunters right now, but I do think a lot of these guys are one of the biggest problems that we have within hunting right now, is because we're like, they're trying to eat our own. But one of the dumbest things that they do is get upset over how somebody else is doing it or what they're doing it with. Like, take the broadhead debate, for example. What does it matter if you like to shoot mechanicals and I like to shoot fixed blades? Like, what effect does does you shooting mechanicals have on me shooting fixed blades, or vice versa? Like,
right.
There's zero, that has zero to do with me, and I have zero to do with you on that. It's not like, if you want to get in the argument about, like, should we be using certain weapons or whatever because it's a detriment to the deer herd, or, like, a certain style is, like, whatever, you know, like, there could be maybe overarching effects to certain things, but, like, especially that one, or like the type of bow you're using, or the type of camo you're wearing. Like, why are you getting mad at somebody and running them down on social media because he likes to shoot an expandable broadhead? Like, just because that's not the way you want to do it, it has zero effect on you. That, to me, that is one of the dumbest things that people get so upset about. Mm-hmm. And then, as someone on the outside, like that kid we're talking about watching YouTube hunting, you know, he's like, hey, I might be interested in this. He starts getting on a couple groups, or he follows some people on Instagram, and then he sees all these people just bashing and arguing, and it's like, well, why would I want to get involved in that? These people just seem to hate each other.
Right, exactly. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, everybody's end goal is the same. So if somebody has success with shooting this broadhead out of this bow wearing this camo, and they have that success and fulfill that goal, and this person over here does the same thing with completely different stuff, like, it doesn't matter. It's like, we're all hunters. Like, we all have the same goal. And that younger person that wants to get into hunting should be able to get online and watch whatever they want and decide on whatever they want and try different things. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the industry right now that are doing good things and promoting good things and coming out with great stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys like, you know, Chris B and Lee Ellis. I mean, those guys, they're doing good stuff in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can get on YouTube and see their stuff and see what they're coming out with or what they're helping, you know, develop. That stuff's awesome. But, like, let's not fight about which is better or you use this and I use this when we just all have the same goal.
Exactly.
We all just want to shoot deer.
Yep. Yep. And that's why some of those things I stay away from a little bit, and like, I just don't get dug in on them because it's not worth the bandwidth to even be upset about or to worry mm-hmm. about those people. But I don't know. It's just something that I've been thinking about lately too, is the effect that all that infighting not only has on the industry as a whole and is just fuel to the fire for all these people who don't want us hunting anyway, but it's also like the people we should be recruiting into this see that, and then I wouldn't want to be any part of that either. But not to go too far down that rabbit hole, I do want to back up. You mentioned earlier about creating good habitat, and this is something that specifically, like, the first time I really noticed or really thought about it was we were working on a property down in Kentucky around Louisville, and this guy told us, like, he'd never seen, he's got some deer but not much anything else, no rabbits, never seen a quail on the property, like, no doves, anything. So we go in there, we make a plan, we start putting in habitat, and then we go back 1 year and we're mowing it in, like, May, we're mowing some of the switchgrass that we put in for him, and we kick up a covey of quail, and it's like, I texted him that, and he was pumped because he'd never had quail on that property before, and he wanted to hunt them. And it was like that light bulb of, you know, we're doing this for deer. But like you said, if you're making good habitat for deer, it's making it better for everything else too. And that's where, like, I think that gets misunderstood by the people who think hunters are just bloodthirsty or whatever and just out there to kill and all that. The guys like us, and there's a lot of people out there like that that truly love the process and love the outdoors, have that conservation mindset. And when you start doing this stuff, it's a benefit to so many different species that, mm-hmm. like, you wouldn't believe it till you actually do it and see the effect it can have in, you know, not that, I mean, a year, 2 years at the most, you can start seeing some of these benefits, if that, depending on what you're doing, you know?
Oh, definitely. And I think that's what people kind of need to stop and, you know, take a step back and kind of look at the whole big picture, you know, especially when you have a property that, you know, a recreation property that you just want to hunt. It's like, okay, how can I get to my end goal? And that's to, you know, harvest a deer mm-hmm. or harvest a big mature deer. Well, but with, like, benefiting everything that, you know, that lives on that property or could potentially live on that property. And it's like, if you create all that stuff and put all that stuff in, like, your property is gonna, like, the value of it from a cost standpoint, from a habitat standpoint, from an ecosystem standpoint, wildlife standpoint, I mean, that it just skyrockets. And so, like, in my mind and my mindset is like, I don't want to go to a property and, all right, let's do this and do this, and then we're going to get your deer to come here, and all this and that. Like, I want to build and put in habitat first, and then start strategizing on, okay, what are your deer doing now? Like, oh, we've got more bucks on the property now, or we've got more does on the property now because we put in all this habitat or built all this extra habitat or cover or whatever the case may be. Okay, now let's strategize on how to hunt the property. And it could be somebody that's hunted the property for years. They've owned it, it's been in their family forever. Like, they know how to hunt the property. Like, just by putting in the habitat, like, all it's going to do is help them and help them hunt that property.
And that's something that we talk about a lot too, is like when you're doing these things, if your end goal is to hunt and your end goal is to harvest a mature deer too, you can go in and just like make the habitat as best it can possibly be. But keep in mind that if your end goal is to hunt it and you know how to hunt the property, let your habitat improvements make it easier to hunt too, right? And then you're all the wildlife species we're talking about benefit from it, and you're benefiting from it as a hunter who, like you said, your end goal is to harvest a deer. So that's one mistake that I see that I think is a huge benefit to someone bringing in a guy like you to kind of come up with a plan, is guys will get gung ho. They'll see somebody doing something on the internet and they want to go try it, and then they just go do it without really a plan. And then have they made the habitat better? Maybe, but they've made the whole thing really a lot harder on themselves, because they
Oh,
had no
definitely.
plan going in.
Right. And sometimes you can almost ruin a property by, doing certain things or not doing certain things, and some things you see online, you gotta look at it as, is this a fad, like a habitat or wildlife fad, deer hunting fad, or like you hear Jeff Sturgis talking about that a lot. Is this a fad, or is this something that's actually going to benefit the property, like now and in the future?
I think the easiest way to tell that too is if someone that is pushing it is trying to sell you something that will help you with doing whatever it is, it could just be a fad, right? Most of that stuff comes from marketing dollars, and they're trying to sell you something. Like, we all know those people in the industry that it just always seems like all they're trying to do is make the next dollar, and they're not really trying to help people out. I think that's the way you sniff that kind of stuff out, is okay, I see this video of this guy doing something, and then it kind of seems like he's only doing it to try to sell me on his product, or his services or whatever. And not to say that you can't have both, right? Like, you not to say you can't have a guy who's genuinely trying to help you and then also has a great product that could help you as well. But when the product kind of seems to be the end goal for them and not actually, making habitat better or whatever it may be, then that's kind of where you get into that fad territory. And we've seen that a lot over the years. I'm sure you've noticed it too. Certain things that they get so huge on social media or whatever, and you see everybody's doing it everywhere, and then 4 months later, it's like, well, gosh, I wish I didn't do that. And it's gone.
And there's so many, I mean, when you take that step back and you kind of look at the whole picture, like, there's so many great, habitat programs and government programs out there that you can implement. That the great thing, and I don't know if, many people know this or how many people know this, but by building habitat and doing some of these government programs, like you get paid, for putting this stuff in on your property. Like, you get paid for putting in CRP. And there's tons and tons of different programs. You got the CP33, you got buffer strips, you know, filter strips, you got all these different, and that's the great thing is like those offices that you work with, your county offices, NRCS, soil and water, all of those, like they'll send guys out, you know, or have people come out. I've gone out to properties and looked at them to help, you know, what is the best thing to put this property in program wise. And that's kind of what you do, and you develop that, and then you plant it, you establish it, and now you're kind of getting an income for the habitat that you just built. And you can, you know, and you have a lot of say. It's like, okay, I don't want to put something there because I'm gonna put a food plot or whatever the case may be. But yeah, like you can get paid for doing this stuff.
And that really helps because obviously the cost of everything right now and the cost of land, but that really helps offset. And you can still do and achieve your goals for that property, like you're talking about. And you said something there too. You like, what would be best for this property? I think that's huge when it comes to like if someone out there is looking for somebody to come help them with their property, if they just get on the phone with you and say like, "Hey, you got to do this, this, and this, and this, this, and this are bad," right? Without even talking to you about your property or what's around and like that, like probably stay away from that person. Find someone like I'm sure you're this way that's going to take the time to look at and make a plan for a specific place. Like, let's improve on what you have because I can't make your farm the farm down the road, right? Like, there's going to be different elements to both of them and different things that come into play. So, take a look at your farm, what's around them, what your neighbors have, what you can help in the neighborhood, maybe what your best benefit is, and focus on that kind of stuff rather than just, hey, A, B, and C will make your property better and don't do these three things and then you'll kill big bucks. Like, and there's some people out there selling that kind of thing.
Right. And that's the thing. Like every property is different. Every property is different on how it lays out. Every property is different on how the deer use it. And every property is different on its maximum potential.
Yeah,
Like
absolutely.
what you do to that property, just like you said, is different from what you might have done on a property right down the road. And they all hunt different. The property I hunt, my main farm that I killed my buck on this year, there's not, I don't have a single food plot on the property. It was all crops and woods. And what ended up happening on this property is a storm came through, blew a bunch of trees down, created bedding itself. But yeah, I don't have a single food plot on the property. I have stands, cameras, and scrape locations. And then I put in a couple water holes. Nothing major. But yeah, like every property is different. And now here's the thing, like this coming year, like if I wanted to, like yeah, I might want to put a food plot or two on this property. And that's, but it goes back to like everybody's style, like it's gonna change. So
I want to get
there's
your
never
take on
one
this too.
size, never a one size fits all.
Not for sure. I want to get your take on this too, since you talk to a lot of people. One thing that I've noticed is we'll spend probably as much time talking about how to hunt and how to hunt their specific property as we do the habitat side or putting in food plots, right? Because I think a lot of times guys aren't getting the most out of their property because they're just hunting it the wrong way. They're making some little mistake that's killing them before they ever get to the stand, or like they're just a lot of guys could benefit just from, you know, learning how their property lays out, what ways they should access it or not access it. And like you're talking about, find those scrapes, spend the time to scout it. Because a lot of these guys that we go to that have private property, they don't even really scout it. You know, they've got a few trail cameras up and there's parts of the property they've never even really set foot on. And it's like, well, you might be missing the best part right here that you got good access to and all that. But curious your take on that as far as like people just, I mean, not even as much the habitat side, but like teaching how to hunt, you know?
Oh yeah, I think by learning the property, I think you learn a lot on, you know, kind of how it lays out. And it might take you, honestly, it could take you, you know, a year or two to actually learn the property and learn how it actually hunts or what you need to do. But there's so many different things to do or utilize on a property to actually help it hunt as best as it can, like where the deer bed, where your scrapes are at, you know, if you want to set up cameras on certain places, how to get into stands, and can you hunt that stand in the morning? Can you hunt that stand in the evening only, or whatever it may be? Like my property, the best stand on the farm that I killed my buck out of, I could not hunt it in the morning. It was an absolute do not hunt in the morning. And the only way I would get into this stand is I have an e-bike, and I would ride my e-bike directly to the base of the tree, and the deer, like, they'd kind of blow out, but they were so used to people. So like the property owner who lives on the property, he's all time like out. He's all time out around the property, whether it be in his truck or cutting wood or just driving around. And so like they're like super used to, you know, people or a vehicle or whatever. And so me rolling in on an e-bike right to the base of the tree and hopping up, the deer really didn't care. But it takes some time to learn things like that. But once you learn those little like minute details that can help you, then your property hunts so much different and a lot of times so much better.
And that's the thing, that not every property would you be able to do that. But because you, like you said, you learned that and you figured it out, and that's specific to that property. And there's other properties like that too. But if you go try to do that somewhere where the deer are just completely not bothered and they're not used to any of that intrusion at all, and you go try to do that, it's probably not going to work out as well. And, you know, an e-bike to some extent may be an exception, but we've had guys ask about, well, can I ride my four-wheeler around the property or whatever? It's like, well, what goes on normally? You know, are you riding your four-wheeler around 2-3 times a week, or are you going to stay out of here until October 15th and then try to ride your four-wheeler to the stand? Like, that's probably not going to work. So it just goes back to what we were talking about. You know, every property is individual. Like you said, just learning the different stuff that can make the little thing that can make the biggest difference.
Oh yeah, and like one more thing on this property, like, you know, I'd been running cameras. Like my style is I kind of run feed stations all summer with cameras over them just to kind of take inventory and see where the bucks are at. Well, I had a camera on a certain spot in the woods, and I get pictures of deer, you know, some bucks and stuff. And one day I went in there to, I think I had changed the batteries on that camera, and because I just run like just normal chip cameras during the summer, no cell cameras. And I happened to kind of wander a little bit. Like, I want to go check out, you know, this side of the property a little bit farther. And literally 60, 70 yards from where I had this camera originally, I found the best spot ever on the property. And so I'm like, I've got to move this camera. I moved the camera, started getting more deer pictures, and then I usually put my cell cameras out like sometime in August, September, and put cell cameras out, made a mock scrape in this spot, and I ended up hanging a stand about 40 yards off of this spot. That's where I killed my buck. But every buck on the property would come through this spot. I have five cameras on this property, and I might get them on here and there on some others, but every buck on the property walk through this spot, check this scrape at some point, majority of like every night or every couple nights or whatever, but like this was the spot.
And
And I'd have never found that if I wouldn't have kind of said, hey, I want to go check this out over here.
exactly. That's so huge, just being able to be flexible and adjust and know, like, hey, that camera where it's at, maybe it's not catching everything. I fall into that trap sometimes, like get a little bit too reliant on cameras because I got a few different properties I'm hunting or whatever, a couple leases, couple places we own, and just trying to be most efficient with your time of where a buck might be that you want to shoot or that you want to target. And then, you kind of ignore this other spot because you're not seeing anything on camera. Well, that camera's only seeing a very small portion of what's going on there. Like you said, you could move it 40 yards and then bam, you're seeing everything. The guy that hosts our Friday episodes with me, co-host, is he does the same thing we do out in Kansas City area. He's based out of there. And that's one thing that he's talked about a lot, like on public ground, because he comes from a huge public ground background. And he's like, just those little adjustments of finding, okay, I'm not getting anything here, but it seems like this should be the area. What can I do different? And he's told a story before. One of them was literally just turning the camera like to the other side of the tree. And it's like these deer, for whatever reason, would just go on the other side. Like the trail would come and into this one kind of hub area. And he was getting a few deer. But when he turned that camera, like you said, like every buck on the property was right through there, but he wasn't hunting it based on what he was seeing. And it's just those little adjustments.
Yep. And that's, a deer, a duck, a camera, or his path might be like, he might have the path this day, different path that day, you know, and then just kind of change. So yeah, like turning a camera or moving it 40 yards, 60 yards, 20, whatever the case may be, could make all the difference in the world. But it takes, you know, it takes the time to figure those things out.
And there's, in my opinion, there's no better way to actually learn a property like we're talking about. There's no better way than to go out there and hunt it. Right. And go out there and scout it in season, postseason, preseason, get some boots on the ground. You don't have to be super intrusive, but hey, if it's your first year on a property, you know, maybe you give up a little bit and just get in there and learn it, you know, make some mistakes, figure it out. But if you're just trying to learn a property by running cameras or, you know, by playing it almost too safe, I think, and I played about as safe as anybody probably most of the time. But if you're not out there and putting the time in the stand and putting the miles on and walking that place, I just don't think you can learn it as efficiently, as effectively either.
No, I agree. Like it kind of my style, and I really did it on this property is, you know, I'll hang a few, like what I call safe sets, like during the summer, like stands I know, you know, I'll see deer. They're easier to get into. But then honestly, man, I really kind of wait till season to hang some stands. Like, I mean, I'll go in midday and hang a stand and leave. Mm-hmm. And I might even hunt it that afternoon or know that a wind's coming and I'm going to hunt this stand in 2 days. And that's what I did on two or three stands on this property. And hung them right in the middle of the day, was in and out, and killed my buck out of the one.
Yeah.
So
that's something that I talked about with Jared Mills the last time he was on, is like he's almost completely mobile, even on his properties that he owns, right? Like just because we got to talking about, you hear the first time in is usually the best hunt, or the first two times in. Well, even if, again, you just move 40 or 50 yards, that's still the first time you're at that spot. Maybe you can access it a little different. It's a new tree. It's a new setup. So I really tried this year to do kind of what you're talking about. And I've got permanent sets that I know are good because I've been hunting these properties for so long and they're safe, or they're going to be good in the rut, whatever, and they're there. And then I tried to do what you're talking about too and just kind of spread the pressure out, go here or there. And as it would turn out, I shot both of my bucks out of permanent sets, but one was the first time the stand had been hunted and the other was the second time the stand had been hunted. And the first time I was 5 minutes from shooting a mature buck that time. He just came in a little bit after dark. But it's it's not pigeonholing yourself even on a property you know, and going out there, like you said, you know your safe spots, but then don't be afraid to, when season comes around, to push it a little bit and go in there and get after them.
And I, like a lot of guys, like big things now are saddle hunting. And I think Jared does, you know, a lot of them guys, they'll saddle hunt. I'm not a saddle hunter. Kind of haven't been. Might get into it, but that it's not part of my style right now.
Same.
I literally like to go in and hang-ons. Like I'll ride in on my bike, my e-bike, zoom in. I got them all strapped to the bike or in a book bag or something. I'll zoom in, throw it up, make sure it looks good, might cut a couple branches, and I zoom out.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm in and out as quick as I can. I mean, I can hang one of those sets in 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And be out and gone. It's like.
That's, and I, when I started going back to missing all those deer, a lot of times I was taking a climber in because I couldn't afford the hang-on stands that I needed to go hunt all these spots, right? So I was hunting with the Summit climber, and like it later dawned on me that, man, I used to, even those days I'd miss so many deer and I'd see a lot of nice deer, but a lot of times I was hunting that spot for the first time because it was just going in, essentially like what you're talking about, just a little bit different concept and climbing up a tree and then getting down. It's the same thing these guys are doing now with saddles or the hang and hunt stuff. It's the same idea. Just it was a little bit different at the time, and I didn't really realize what we were doing. But it's definitely an effective way to hunt. And I'm like 100%. You. Right now, I'm pretty much exclusively hang-ons. Like, I still got my climber if I would need to go take it. But I love throwing up sticks and throwing up a hang-on and sitting in that or my permanent sets. And as it turns out, both the deer I shot this year were out of ladder stands. Go figure. But, like, that's my preferred way is what you're talking about. Hang-ons. You know, get in there, get it done, and again, I got those permanent sets too. Because once you've hunted a property for 10 plus years, there are going to be spots that you know are just repeatable. They're going to be good year after year. You got a chance there, right?
Yeah. And that's like both, you know, the two sets I went in the middle of the day and hung, like, they're awesome stands. Like, it ended up being awesome stands. Obviously, I killed a deer, you know, my buck out of one. Like, they're going to turn into permanent sets. Like, I'm just going to leave them there.
Yeah.
But like I said, I've always got a couple hang-ons at the house. I mean, heck, I've even went and tore down a hang-on at one property to take it and put at another property. But I try to keep a couple like on hand, and you know, and they're nothing fancy ones.
Yeah.
They're, you know, $40, $50 ones you can buy at Sportsman Guide or something like that,
but right,
smaller ones because they're not very big, they're lighter, and so they're easier to get in and out and drag up the tree and stuff. And yeah, I just try to be, you know, stay kind of mobile and be able to get aggressive if I need to, and sometimes that's what it takes.
But and you mentioned there though, the flip side of that is too, don't be scared to leave a stand if you find a good spot that like while you're being mobile you're like, dang, this is a pretty good spot. I should probably have a stand here. Put the stand there. Because then you got an e-bike or if you're walking or whatever, how much easier is it and faster and quieter? And you're way more likely to go in there. At least I am if I have a stand hung. Like, doesn't mean you have to hunt it all the time and overhunt it. But the one or two times you might have went in a hanging hunt, well, now you have a stand there and it's you zip right in. You're probably more likely to go hunt it. And you're quieter, you're not sweating putting up a hang on, so you're not as cold, you're likely to stay longer. Like, there's a lot of benefits too to leaving a stand there on the flip side of being mobile too, I think. So, like, yeah, it, like you're saying, you find a good spot while you're being mobile, don't be scared to just say, hey, this needs to be a permanent set.
Yep, just leave it because that's, you know, because it just depends on what you see the deer doing.
Yeah.
And it just happens that, you know, this is this area that every deer on the property walks through.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yep. And it just, like we said a little bit ago, it takes time to learn all the little details on a property. You might not learn them all in the first year before the first season, you know, depending on when you, if it's a permission piece or you buy it or lease it, whatever, you know, it might take a couple years, but everything you can learn about a property is beneficial between now and as long as you have the property to hunt.
I want to get into a couple other things here before we before I let you go, if that's all right, if you still got time.
Oh, yeah.
So you talked about the call side of Bone Boss too. What got you into that, and then what does that look like for you now? What kind of calls you guys making? And
yeah, so like I said, I got deer and turkey calls right now, and that's, I mean, that's kind of what I specialize in because that's what I love to do. But that kind of transpired from, like, I want to create something that sounds like what I hear and like what I want to hear, and something that's going to last, man, and be like handcrafted, that somebody's going to want to have and use all the time, or buy and get passed down to their son, you know, because or daughter or whoever, because you know that's a big thing, you know, passing things down generationally, especially hunting stuff. You
Yeah.
know, my first gun, my dad gave me, and it's like 75, 80 years old, and that's what I killed a ton of deer, ton of squirrels, birds, everything. But I wanted to make something that kind of checked all those boxes for me. And so what better way to do that than, well, to, you know, make it yourself. And so started out with the kind of turkey calls, and so I've got a slate over glass pot call, walnut pot. So that's a cool thing, is like I'm using like walnut wood from Indiana most of the time on like to create this call. Like I've even went cut a tree down, milled it, let it dried, and made a call out of it.
That's
And
cool.
so yeah, we a little off story, but we had a big giant walnut and my mom and dad's that we that died, and me and my dad ended up cutting that down, and the tree had been there for it was massive, 100 years, you know, it was there when my
Right.
great grandparents lived down the road. And so we cut that down, and I cut a chunk of it off and saw and milled that up, and I turned a grunt call on it for my dad and gave it to him for Christmas.
That's
And
cool.
might have been one of the best sounding grunts I've ever made. I almost wanted to keep it for myself.
Right.
But no, he definitely appreciated that. And but then I got a glass over glass walnut pot call, and then going to be coming out with some other kind of calls too, to kind of add to that line. And then on the deer side, I got a grunt, and that's the thing. Like the grunt is just a simple grunt, adjustable reed. You know, it's not handcrafted, it's not made out of wood. I will turn grunt calls, but I just wanted to be able to offer something that was just simple for people, but sounded the way that I want something to sound like.
Yeah.
And the rattle bag's super cool. It's kind of my own design, and it's a bag, but you have a handle for your hand so you won't drop it. You have what I call travel mode. You put a strap around it so it's not clinking around. And then you've got different dowels in there to kind of mimic that sound, but kind of give it a different tone. So instead of just having all of one wood or all of one size or whatever the case may be. So I got some laying here in my desk, but just to kind of show, but
Yeah.
like this is your packaging for the turkey call. So this is just a slate over glass, strut boss is what I call it. But then there's the grunt. Like I said, just your tube, you know, green tube. I call that one the rut boss.
Yeah.
And then the bag here, you see the packaging for that. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, on the game fall side, kind of what you're going to see. You know, I've got several wholesale accounts where you can find them in stores. You know, something really cool is the American Way TV hunting show. So I'm the official game call sponsor of that with Tony and Angie Walker.
Yeah.
And so I sponsor their show for their game calls. They're using BoneBoss game calls. Their new show will come out here in July. So you'll see them guys using the calls and everything. You'll see some TV segments of the calls.
Sweet.
And so that's kind of, you know, that's been growing from what that started, and kind of more of like a, you know, hobby type deal of like, hey, let's see what we can make. You know, I'm in my garage making
Yeah.
stuff or whatever, and to kind of turn it into, you know, full blown business, sponsoring a hunting show, and just kind of keep growing that and keep coming out with new products. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like your idea on the rattle bag too, 'cause some of those, like especially some of just the cheaper plain old rattle bags that you see or you get, and it kind of just sounds like somebody's hitting a tree with a wooden baseball bat.
Yeah.
And you're gonna rattle in a ton of 2 and 3 year old bucks, I promise. But there's something about those mature bucks that if they hear something that's off, it might that little bit of nuance, like we were talking about, could be the difference that brings in a 5-year-old versus the 2-year-old spike. And hey, if you want to kill a 2-year-old spike, by all means. But if you're the guy that's trying to hunt that mature deer, you want to rattle him in, it's going to take a little bit more, more realism. Yeah.
And the cool thing about that, the bag too, is, you know, I talked that handcrafted. Well, I joke, I can't sew. Like I'm not a sewer. But I have a lady that lives relatively close to me that I know, good family friend. And she's a sewer. She makes bags and everything. So I went to her and designed this bag on the way it lays out and the way stuff goes in there. And she sews them for me. So you're still getting, you know, that handcrafted, like it is made. This stuff is made in the USA, like right here in Northwest Indiana. You know, you're getting premium, you know, top shelf game calls.
Mm-hmm. I'm all about that. That is one thing that I think is huge. And I know a lot of companies, a lot of people that say they just can't do it because of the cost or whatever. And, you know, honestly, most people are willing to pay just a little bit more or premium for something that's made over here, especially in the hunting industry. You know, it's like, know the demographic a little bit. Most of these guys, if they can, they're willing to spend a little bit of extra money for something, like you're saying, it's made right in their backyard or whatever. And it's generally more quality stuff too. Like, I'm sure the stuff you're making is high quality, like you said, handcrafted turkey calls and things like that. That's not just something that you're ordering off of Temu and getting shipped from Timbuktu, right?
Right. No. And and that's the thing, like they all take time to make, you know. We're gearing up for next weekend is the Indiana Deer and Turkey Expo in Indianapolis. And so I'll be there. I'll have a booth. And Tony and Angie Walker, American Way, they have a big booth, and so I'll be in there with them.
Nice.
And, but man, I've been spending my evenings, you know, put the kids to bed, and I spend the evenings in the shop just kind of, you know, cranking out calls. I mean, turkey calls and deer and just anything I can get made and to take is kind of what I've been working on the last few weeks.
What's your turnaround time on your most popular turkey call? Like, you sit down and you start. How long is that from start to finish?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me that, and it's kind of a, I don't want to say loaded question, but the problem becomes on those is your dry times. And so, like total time of, like, you know, sanding and engraving and putting coating on and putting your glass and your slate and gluing all that in, like total time is like 30, 45 minutes at most. But it's stretched out over several days because, well, I got to put the coating on and then I got to let that dry for a day and, you know, then kind of hit it with some steel wool to kind of knock stuff off. And it might need another coating, it just depends. But, and then you got to glue your glass in, and then there's a day, and then you got to glue your slate on, there's a day. So your dry times are what kind of turns it into a little bit longer process. Mm-hmm. But the actual work behind it, yeah, it's not very long.
Yeah, that's interesting. I get that question about taxidermy a lot, and it is the exact same thing. It's like, total time on a deer. if you just taken like from the animal and getting on the form and painted and pretty and everything, you know, 2.5-3 full days of just hours, but it takes that thing 3 to 4 weeks to dry, depending on what the weather is and everything like that, like in between the processes of that drying time. So, I mean, overall, if you just started and finished one, if you could just do it all and didn't have to worry about drying, you'd get one done in 4 days, but you know,
right. Yeah. I could crank out, you know, tons of them in one whole day, but yeah, it turns into multiple days because of dry times. And
yeah.
And that's why when I make them, I try to make them in batches.
Yep.
You know, I try to do 10, 20, you know, plus or whatever at a time. That way I'm kind of getting a bunch, because if I'm doing one, I might as well do two. And if I'm doing two, I might as well just do 10 or 20 or something, because I'm spending the time to sand it and coat it and do all that. So yeah.
That's exactly how I do the deer heads too. Like I do them in batches because I've got all the stuff out, because it takes different stuff to do different processes. I'm sure yours is the same way. So it's like, I've started doing this, I'm going to get this many done. And then when they dry, I'll break out the finishing stuff and we can, and then I can finish a batch or whatever. So yeah, so very similar, but different process, obviously, but kind of interesting how that works. So the seed we talked about at the ATA, obviously we're there with them. What's your tie in there? And then tell us a little bit about it, 'cause I was interested in, kind of the system you told me about. And it, again, just like your grunt call you're talking, it seems kind of simplified. And because sometimes this stuff gets really convoluted and people get confused and then it's like overwhelmed. And by the time they get to through thinking everything, they're like, okay, forget it. But like, this seems to be a pretty simple system where if a guy wants this, he can go get this.
Yep. No, that's exactly it. So yeah, it's a, you know, Big Buck Magnet, and you know, I got a great relationship with them and John over there, and we're just really good friends, and they've had their deer feed side for a little while now, and you can find Big Buck Magnet products, because you'll be able to find the food plot seed too in all Ace Hardwares across the nation. Do It Best, you know, you can find all this stuff in those stores. Like, you go to Ace, if they don't have it on the shelf, ask them and they'll order it. But they've had the feed in stores. And so, you know, I went to John, and John was already thinking about it. And it's like, man, we need to develop a food plot seed line that is just that, simplifies everything for everybody out there, for hunters, and just doesn't overcomplicate it. And because I just feel like, you know, sometimes you look on these competitors, you know, or other food plot seed companies websites, and it's just like, man, it's just like like tons and tons of different blends, and then it just kind of gets overwhelming on, well, what do I pick? You know, I just got a quarter acre or a half acre that I want to do, and well, it's this, or it's this type of soil. It's like, well, what do I pick? And then, like you said, it's like, well, you know, I'll just go to buy whatever, or I'll just get a bag of oats or something. And so the goal behind what we came up with was just that, simplifying it for hunters and allowing, you know, we don't have many blends. We have clover, we have alfalfa, we have our system, which is long haul grains and long haul greens, and then a screen. That's it. That's all you need right now. And granted, we got a couple more blends kind of in the works that might come out next year, but you know, we're not going to have 20 some, like, you know, we might have 8, 9, no more than 10 total.
Yeah.
But what each one does is gives you exactly what you need for whatever season you're wanting or whatever soil type. So like, got clover, got wet soil, put the clover in. If you got sandier soil, put your alfalfa in. The long haul system is awesome because it's exactly that. It's a system. So you have your long haul grains and your long haul greens. They're in separate bags because you don't really want to plant your grains with your greens in the same box, because your smaller seed is going to go to the bottom, and then you're going to have half a plot with brassicas, and then the other half's going to be the grains because all your brassicas came out first.
Yeah.
And so the system allows you to plant them together, plant them separate, or mix them with something else. I love planting clovers and alfalfa in the fall, and then I mix them with grains to kind of, the grains established first, and it's kind of that cover crop system when you do it that way. But that's what it allows you to do. You want to take the long haul grains, take your alfalfa, plant it in August. That way you can start getting that alfalfa established. You can do that. Or you can plant the long haul grains and then go over top of it with low broadcast and put your greens over top. So that's the beauty of the system that we've developed here, is that it gives you the option, but by simplifying it, it doesn't have to be hard for people.
Yeah.
And then too, and like, all of our stuff is made for a half acre, not this like, well, I have a quarter acre or it might be a quarter acre. Everything you're going to buy, every bag that you buy, is going to be for a half acre. So if you have a quarter acre or you have 2 quarter acre spots you want to do, you just buy one bag.
Yeah.
And the good thing is the smaller bags that you see behind me here, they're resealable. So you rip the tag off, you put half of it in, do your quarter acre, close it shut, and then go to your next spot, or maybe a couple days later you go to your other spot, but they're resealable.
Yeah.
And so that's something that's really nice too about it. But just being able to simplify things for people, and you're going to be able to find the seed starting in March next month. And all of Ace, Do It Best, you can buy from me direct on my website, or reach out. And there's other dealers around, Tony and Angie Walker. There are dealers for it too, because Big Buck Magnet is a sponsor of their show. But so you can buy it from them. But like, it just simplifies it for hunters that you want this, you buy this, you want this, you buy this. And you don't have to look through, pages of different blends.
That's, I think that's the thing right there. The simplicity of it and the fact that it is, they're good blends, like you're talking about, things work the way they're supposed to. You don't have stuff together that doesn't work well together. And then like that, just all being a half acre, I think is big too. Our guy's probably gonna want to buy, like some guys are gonna be like, well, I just want a quarter acre, I don't want to buy a whole half acre bag. Sure, but most of your guys are gonna do what you said. You know, they're gonna use half the bag, they're gonna seal it up, and they're gonna move on to their other spot. But like I've seen some companies out there that'll have like a bag for a third of an acre or 2/3 of an acre. And then it's like, well, now I'm doing math. I don't want to do math. I want to plant a food fly, you know? So like and if it's a good quality blend, there are times where I like to overseed stuff. But especially when you're talking about brassicas, like if it says a half acre, get your broadcast rate set right and get that thing on a half acre because that's where it's going to be the best. That's where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. It's not like, okay, I've got a half acre, but this bag says 2/3 of an acre, so I'm just going to throw the whole thing on here. Well, that may be fine, but then you're also losing some of your money. And I don't know anybody right now, especially that wants to just throw their money away.
No, not at all. And that's we're looking out for people trying to make it to where they're getting the best bang for their buck, on being able to reseal it like that is huge. Because how many times, you have buddies that hunt a property together, or buddies that just hunt together and they got separate properties. Well, now 2 buddies, man, they can buy 1 bag of Longhaul greens and 1 bag of Longhaul greens and do, quarter acre on each spot, and kind of helps them out. And that's one, and you watch this too, because one thing you're going to see is you're getting 28 pounds in the Longhaul greens bag. It's a bigger bag. And you're getting 4 pounds in the Longhaul greens. That's 32 pounds total that you're getting for a half acre. You look around and look at other stuff. And somebody might see the price on, well, that seems kind of expensive for grains or greens. But when you compare what we're offering and what you're getting per pound to others, it doesn't compare.
Yep,
You're getting
absolutely.
the best bang for your buck with our product from a seed standpoint, from a cost standpoint, and from just being overall good. And so and that's going to be huge, and it's really going to help people out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because you go buy something off the Walmart shelf or whatever, and you think, oh, well, it was only $12 for this bag, and I can do a half acre with it. And then you look at somebody else's bag, and it's like, well, that's $25 for a half acre. How is that good? Well, you turn the seed label, you turn it around, you look at the seed label, and you're like, okay, the actual amount of seed I'm getting, that stuff is cheaper. You know, the stuff that seems more expensive is cheaper because it's actually seed. It's not just, filler, more or less.
And so much testing went into these seeds, by myself, because that's, I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I look with
You
my
have the
eyes,
testing grounds, right?
right? That's what I do. I put seed in the ground. That's what I do. I love that agronomy behind everything on what's going to maximize your soil, what's best for the soil. We're putting this seed in the ground, and how can we maximize that seed? But so much research and testing went into the blends and the seeding, ratio on like what you want to this to that. And that's how we came up with what you're getting. And so it's going to be, I really think it's, obviously a little biased, but I think it's really going to change the game and show people like it doesn't have to be complicated, and people make it complicated. And this is going to be simplicity at its best,
Yeah,
really.
man. I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys can do with it. I want to definitely try some of it out this fall. I'm gonna get my hands on some of it and try it out because talking to you at the show, seeing the blends, I like what you guys are doing for sure. Since I already screwed up your time today, I don't want to hold you too long. So I'll let you tell people where they can find you at, Bone Boss, whatever, just like where they can follow you, where they can find your calls and stuff. And then I'll let you get out of here, man.
Yeah, no. So, yep, you can find me on Facebook, Bone Boss Outdoors. You can find me on Instagram, Bone Boss Outdoors as well. I have a YouTube. It's under Dalton C. Tunis. And so we're going to be putting out some pretty cool stuff this year, videos and everything on the YouTube page. So go ahead and give that a subscribe. But you can also, check the website out, bonebossoutdoors.com, and you can see all the land management services that I offer, from planting to forestry mulching. Big in the forestry mulching, so hit that up. But then you can also get to the game call site on that, and you can buy game calls on there, and so get you an order in. But you'll be able to here soon, get Big Buck Magnet seed and some of the feed products on the website as well. So here pretty soon, what I call Outdoor Boss, that's my online store, that'll be on there as well. And so you'll be able just to order seed on there too. And so, yeah, I mean, check things out, hit me up, send some messages. So I'm always open to talk to people or just see how I can help maximize properties and help people kill deer and turkeys.
For sure. That's what it's all about. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out, coming on, talking to us. I'm sure we'll do this again at some point in the future, maybe closer to season or after next season or something. We'll definitely get you back on. I am not one that's scared to have return guests. So
I like
it's
it.
always good.
Almost.
I enjoy talking to guys who kind of similar mindset, and have different ideas about things too. We can talk deer, we can talk seed and everything like that. I think it's good. And hopefully it helps some people out because similar to you, that's what we're about. It's just trying to make people better hunters, give more opportunities and maybe provide some entertainment as well. But
Yeah, always.
ultimately, maybe make them a little better hunters so they can achieve their ultimate goal. You said earlier of filling tags. So again, thanks for coming on, dude. I will link all that stuff in the description for everybody too, so it'll be easy to find. And we'll do this again sometime.
Hey, sounds good, man. I appreciate you having me on, and I always love talking deer. I could talk about it all day, so I'm definitely in on coming back.
Awesome.